Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome once again to Reckless Attack, a 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons actual play podcast. I am, as ever, Captain Dungeon Captain
Admiral?
Dungeon Admiral is kind of a fun game. Admiral?
Dadmiral?
Dadmiral. Should have workshopped this beforehand. I'm so sorry. Leave it in the comments what you guys think. But I'm Nathan, and I'm the person running the game or whatever. But I'm surrounded, as always, with the excellent people here at Reckless Attack, starting with the individual cattywampus to my left.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Jonathan, and I play Checkers, the Grung Druid, and it's just your frog pals, Mango and Junior. And today may be the greatest day of Checkers' life, in that he has fulfilled one of his lifelong dreams to be a sky pirate, not just a regular pirate. A sky pirate.
Yeah, right. Like, if you can, why settle?
Yeah.
Dream big.
Exactly. So he's, like, imagining all the cool stuff he and his party can do now. They have an airship, and that they're just flying off into the sunset on grand adventures. And to my left.
Hi, everyone. I'm David, and I play Kaskrin Brightmane, a dwarven sorcerer. And Kaskrin thinks that, actually, he could get used to this. You know, like, flying around the world, outside the city, the walls of Agmar, on a skyship. Living in luxury, getting his own cabin. Like, this is pretty good.
You have to share with Checkers.
No. So actually, this is pretty bad.
You don't have to share with Checkers in terms of room. You have to share because Checkers keeps following you around and ordering you explicitly as, again, captain. We'll talk about it later, but it's forceful, yes.
And to my left.
Hi, everyone. My name is Steve, and I am playing Selv Asterlin, the dragonborn monk who is ecstatic about being up in the air on a skyship on a huge mission, an enormous mission. One might even call it Titanic.
Absolute unit.
Hope not. Hope not.
A chonker of a mission.
A heckin' chonker of a mission.
I am actually more comfortable with that. At least for your guys' sake.
Largest boy. Yeah.
I just didn't bring all the extra D6s for all the falling damage required.
And across from me.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sophie, and I play Valeska Carter, the human asterisk, cleric asterisk of the Arcana domain. And Val is very excited because she made everyone granola, so now everyone's her best friend, and she's going to learn so much and, you know, be one of the best shipmates, deckhands. She'll figure it out with the right terminology.
No, I'm going to be the best deckhand.
Crew member.
Crew member. And they will all love her.
She said threateningly.
Right?
Yeah, because if they love her, then they'll realize the error of their ways of poaching beautiful sky whales and be just overloaded with guilt that they turn their life into helping others.
Just conservationist you want the full 180 swing,
exactly.
Basically. Yeah, well, I mean, you guys are heroes, so who knows? Maybe that'll happen. But as alluded to, you guys are sailing the sky.
Hey.
You are up on the Sky Stalker. I don't think you guys have renamed it at this juncture. I think it was kind of decided. It's like, well, we're kind of like, we're in charge of it, but we're borrowing it. Plus, there's a whole lot of baggage renaming boats, etc.
It feels like, isn't it bad luck to rename a boat?
I mean,
a ship, a vessel?
My assumption is that everything is bad or good luck on a boat.
Feels like a little much to rename the ship when we are in a tenuous agreement with Captain Livingstone.
Right.
Yeah, right.
That might be overstepping for right now.
I mean, all it takes is we just have to erase one letter. And then we get the Sky Talker, and we're good to go.
I mean, it's something to think about. Maybe that's the compromise.
We got
to
go back and find that talking board from, like,
episode
2.
Oh, yeah.
And just find out where, like, hundreds more of them are, and then we can build a boat out of
that,
those.
That could be the little front bit where the mermaid usually goes.
Yeah. the worst ship livery of all time. Just a plank of wood nailed to the front. It keeps talking.
I came up with that thing, and I'm a little disappointed in myself that I didn't think that it needs to go on the skyship.
Yeah.
Should go everywhere.
That's a great idea.
Next adventure.
Well, good news, guys. You guys are once again up in the air, once again traveling the wilds of Rixia. So who knows? Maybe on this giant random encounter table that I have 100% definitely come up with, talking plank could be there. We don't know. You guys could run across it again.
It's time for you to talk the plank.
Speaking of, you are indeed sharing this ship experience with Captain Livingstone, the largest dwarf you've ever seen, standing at, again, I think, a strapping 5'7", I think?
5'8",
excuse
me. A cubular 5'8". 5'8" in all directions.
Making him the, just in our party, the second tallest.
The second tallest, but probably heavier. Well, I don't know. Probably equal heavy with Kaskrin.
That's true.
In that he's not made of stone.
True.
Which adds a lot, I would imagine.
I am
it depends
pretty
on the type of stone. Mm-hmm. It can be very porous.
That's an excellent thing to figure out as you are desperately trying to kill time on this adventure.
What am I made out of?
Because it is Captain Livingstone. It is his conductor, Mamba Simone. Lest we forget, there is indeed a Simone lurking somewhere on this
Checkers
ship.
Checkers and Mango are very upset. Like,
we should have brought Taroth, honestly. Yeah.
There is additionally, of course, the remaining crew members. RIP to, hold on.
RIP to the Tims.
RIP to the Craigs.
Yes, we lost all the Craigs.
Oh, what?
The Craigs died by Sel's hand.
Yes.
We have two Tims and five Joes.
Yes. Okay. Well remembered. That is exactly correct. There are some Tims and then a full complement of Joes still helping man the ship and keep it running. Additionally, you guys have a couple members of the Bones with you. You guys are joined, of course, by the Seeker, which is one of the Untethered that you guys saved all those many, many episodes ago, who specifically was trying desperately to shriek at, shoot beams at, and eat. We don't know exactly what the end game was, but upon the local frogs of the guild.
I have that effect on people.
I need to have more people try to eat the frogs.
Yeah.
Eat frogs. I'm taking note. As well as the Burden. Who has been clonking around various parts of the ship all day.
Gosh, what a feat in itself for a member of the Bones, the Undying Legion, to actually clonk around. Like, they're built to not clonk.
Well observed, and I'm really excited to get into some of the specific minutiae of these bones.
Does the shield need to hit them with that hammer we got? Maybe just, like, you know, just try it out. Just,
can we untether and retether them? Does that help, like, turning it off and on again?
Quick restart.
Yeah.
Well, you guys luckily have at least 4 full days of travel to ask and answer many questions such as these. You guys have just left. You guys are probably only a few hours into your journey as we pick up with you all. There's a bit of a rhythm to the boat now. You know, people have jobs to do, and things are just kind of running. There is gorgeous blue sky above you. There is luscious green forest underneath you. And you are headed approximately, you know, kind of, I'll say west northwest, straight to one of the most dangerous, scary places in the entire continent. But, you know, we'll address that. We'll address that later. But for now, vibes are pretty decent. And at this juncture, you guys haven't really been assigned any tasks, that sort of thing, for the running of the ship. It seems to be, at least at this speed, kind of running itself. You can see the way that the crew works under a little bit more comfortable situations, unlike the last time you were.
I challenge you, Nathan,
on
that both Val and Checkers have not been assigned something, because I assume Val and Checkers are both peppering Captain Livingstone with questions about how the ship works and everything he's doing every second that we have been on this boat.
So I am actually extremely pleased that you mentioned that, because Captain Livingstone is answering these questions, and his gruff tone of voice little curtly, but seems relatively forthcoming with, you know, answering questions about, yes, well, our elemental engine, you know, helps keep us aloft, and, yes, the lights do automatically turn on at night, and actually the sails are really important as part of all of this, and seems to be giving you an amount of information, but actually hasn't, even if he is maybe getting peppered by these questions and maybe annoyed or frustrated by these questions, is just kind of keeping his eyes on the non-existent road and driving ahead and doing his best.
Is there any, does the ship itself make any noise other than maybe like the flapping sails or anything like that? Like, is there any ambient noise to the ship?
That's an excellent question. I will pull the group. What do we think is cooler?
What elemental?
Fire elemental that you guys saw as part of the suit of armor that the first mate was wearing during your guys' combat. That is actually the elemental that powers the ship itself.
I'm kind of imagining there is the faint crackling of like a fireplace at all times, like while the ship is running, and like when it's really going, it's like a roaring flame.
Yes, I'm very into that. So yeah, there is, no matter where you guys are on the ship, on the deck, down below, in the engine room, there is that crackle of a fire, always going, ever present. And the ship, despite some of the roughness of the outside, of its various repair holes, that sort of thing, is unbelievably smooth. There is no turbulence. There is no wobbles of air. It seems to cut through everything, at least at this beautiful day amount of wind and whatnot, very, very well. There are, you know, it is well maintained. It really looks good up on the deck. There are quite a few railings all around the side that every once in a while you can see various crew members hook themselves into as they're doing their, I don't know, swabbing and other such seafaring activities, skyfaring activities. And then there is one kind of big, sturdy mainmast that has fiery runes going all the way up it that actually go into, if you look closely or kind of are up there in the crow's nest, can see a little bit of just steam escaping through the top of the mast.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Val makes it a point to read every single rune, because she now understands all languages.
That's very true. You would know that this is Maker speak.
God, the notebook she's filling in every detail of how the ship works, what the crew does.
For those who have ever been to like an old city, like in Europe or Asia or whatever, something that has been around for literally millennia, will know that you can just like turn a corner, say in the city of Rome, and there will be just like a fountain that has been there for 5,000 years or whatever the hell, right? And it'll just be like, oh yeah, this graffiti, yeah, that was done in approximately the year 1200 BC, and it just has been there, and yeah, it does translate to, haha, it's a penis, but it is still pretty cool. That is how it feels like to be in this ship sometimes, if you really know what you're looking for. Every once in a while, you'll find just a little...
Haha, it's a penis.
Yeah. There's like in the Maker speak, there's like comments in the code, and one of them is just like, this is a load-bearing glyph. We don't know what it does, but if you try to move it, everything will break.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, kind of. There you would find little details like that to show that this is a lived-in ship, not just by these crew members, but you feel the history of this place, because it has to be at least several centuries old. And there would be exactly that sort of thing of people who lived and worked here centuries ago that have put in little notes, little reminders, little like put X amount of coal in to feed the elemental every 4 hour, whatever it is. And you would be finding just tiny little nuggets like that all over.
I would add a little small detail, because I am imagining the crew itself don't have perfect knowledge of the whole ship. How could they know how everything works?
Nope.
And so it's like mixed along with all the little instructions on how to start things and keep things maintained, there's also like little superstitions of things where it's like you have to, in order to turn the engine on, like you put this much coal in and then you like turn these levers. But also someone has to be like walking in a circle three times over here because yeah. like it worked that one time. So like just keep it in.
Yeah, for sure. And there's probably a couple places that have been repaired. And, oh, hey, we should be sure to replace this in 6 months because it'll wear out. But, yeah, it is exactly like that. And like you said, for people who cannot possibly know how it actually works, the ship's crew seemed to be doing a pretty good job from your untrained eyes of keeping things running smoothly and at least moving forward in a linear direction. This whole place, you know, you certainly would have had access to it while it's parked in Agmar. You flew here, but now it's kind of your ship in a way that it wasn't before. And at this juncture, you have not been told of anything that you should or should not be doing. How do you spend your first day up in the sky?
So Checkers has some very important business to conduct up on the Skystalker.
I mean, yeah, you're in charge.
Exactly. And
oh no.
by extension, actually, everything that Checkers does is important business.
Correct.
While on the Skystalker.
And one of the first things he does is brings everyone on the ship aboard onto the deck so that he can give a presentation. This is something that he would have worked with Kaskrin on. So he brings everyone up, pulls out his little trifold board that Kaskrin got.
I made that.
Yeah. And on this, you know, make sure that everyone's seated. Like, you know, everyone's...
Kaskrin's like hushing people.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Shh, quiet in front.
I love that Kaskrin has been like, all right, if we're going to do this, we're doing it right.
Right.
We have an order. We're making it official.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to practice before we do that.
Right. We did a dry run earlier.
Yeah.
Checkers timed it and everything. But Checkers calls out to his crew and his allies. And he says, now, I just want to set the record straight. I'm sure all of you have had this burning question in your mind about who's really in charge here on the Skystalker.
Everyone who is not Checkers, you do not need to roll any sort of check to feel just a little bit of tension from everyone who is not a guilder on the ship.
There's tension from Val. She didn't know what was happening.
Yeah, right. Well, fair.
And I just want to take this moment to clear all that up. And to help me out, I have this lovely trifold presentation.
Val claps because she knows it's time to clap.
Yeah.
Selv has a worried expression on his face, simply because he remembers what happened the last time any guilders gave a presentation.
Val mind links Selv and is like, where are the beans?
Yeah, no, it's fine. There's no dirt here. It's fine. Yeah.
So Selv is specifically looking out for the beans.
Yeah.
Sure.
If you all reach under your chair, you find a little pot.
You get a bean and you get a bean.
Hold it up. No. So what I've done is I have laid out the new hierarchy of the Skystalker.
And Kaskrin opens up the trifold presentation. It's like this whole org chart in here.
Mm-hmm.
At the bottom, you'll see all the pirates and part of the Golden Tree Guild. Valeska, Kaskrin, Selv.
Okay. Val's going with it.
Mm-hmm.
I, Sophie, am
what did I know about this?
No.
Okay. I was like, wait a minute. I like looked at it the second you said that. I was like, wait a minute.
Already off script.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, you know, again, org chart. I've drawn lines to like another person who's like sitting above everyone else. And all of you will now answer to Captain Livingstone. And it's just like written Captain Livingstone in crayon.
I thought it was going to be Mango.
I did, 1,000,000%. Captain Livingstone just kind of raises his eyebrow a little bit, but continues listening.
But the important part is where I am in all of this. And I want to direct your attention to the very top of the chart, where it just says Checkers, but there's like two lines hidden. Like he's covered them up in paper.
Yep.
Now, you may think,
You can't have two captains on a ship. That's ridiculous. How will you know who to follow? Well, that's easy. You see, I'm not just... And he rips off a piece of paper. Captain Checkers. I'm now... And he rips off the last piece of paper. Admiral Captain Checkers. Which is above the captain.
Mm-hmm. Per the hierarchy on yes. the chart.
as visualized, mm-hmm. yes.
How long is the line between like Captain Livingstone and Checkers?
It's like... mostly like the whole sheet of paper. Like,
yeah.
Everyone has been written in a single line down at the bottom, mm-hmm. and then they all report to Livingstone, and then just a straight line up all the way to Admiral Captain Checkers.
This must be a very large trifold, so you would have had to have found the spot on the hull where no wind is.
Correct.
So it didn't get blown over.
And Checkers is waiting patiently for the applause.
Val will clap because she knows it's expected and just kind of is like, maybe we just wrap this up. She doesn't say that. She's thinking it. Golf claps the whole time.
Kaskrin is like looking at it because I'm trying to figure out exactly how much he knew beforehand. Because like I feel like I've been demoted.
Yes.
Explicitly.
Yeah, yeah. You should, actually.
If you look closely, there was other lines on there that have just been scribbled.
Well, my suggestion was actually on the other side of the trifold is like your original org thing. And then he kind of like Checkers kind of like folded it backwards and flipped it over, yes. and now he's got his new one on there. Mm-hmm.
This is the first time you're seeing
it. Yeah, definitely didn't look like this when I helped.
So I hope that clears everything up. We still have Captain Livingstone. If you hear the captain, it's Captain Livingstone. But you will always refer to me as Admiral Captain Checkers. Very important. Thank you all for your time. Enjoy the rest of your day. Now get back to work!
None of the crew moves in this moment, despite the Captain Admiral order mm-hmm. to get back to work.
Admiral Captain.
Excuse me. Admiral Captain.
As Checkers corrects
the DM. Checkers corrects the DM.
He just yells out to the sky.
I heard you. It's Admiral Captain.
Captain Admiral's fine.
The power's gone to his head. And they all are looking at you. Checkers, mm-hmm. while still definitely looking their regular captain.
Yes.
You see the captain set his jaw and take a breath and step forward first with his peg leg and then with his normal boot. And he looks down at Checkers. Or eye level, or I don't know if you propped yourself up on something.
Yeah, he's definitely standing on something.
That I realized in the moment that was probably the case. Looks over at Checkers, makes eye contact, and then wheels on his crew and says, "You heard the Admiral, Captain. Get to work. This ship won't fly herself. Let's go." And everyone starts to scurry as he starts ambling back to the helm.
Kaskrin kind of like turns around a little bit and makes the magical symbol in his hand to cast message. And Selv and Valeska, you just hear the word mutiny?
It's only day one.
I think it means already day one.
It's only day one. You guys have started psychically talking to one another. The crew has already dispersed. And standing there are the two members of the Bones, and one of them raises its hand. Admiral Captain, hey, the burden here, seeker there. Where are we on the organizational chart? It's good to, you know, we also like, you know, kind of a like a hierarchy thing. Like it's comforting for me, definitely. I mean, I don't want to speak for the seeker or I guess anyone else, but I mean, I guess, are we crew? Are we like, I'm not really sure exactly what our role on this ship. I'm happy to do the role, whatever you guys have in mind on the ship is, but if there's anything that...
The entire time the burden is talking, Val has a notebook open and is drawing her own org chart. And we'll try to wait for the burden to stop talking and then realize they won't. And we'll just be like, you know what? You are absolutely right. It is great to just have that knowledge so there's no confusion. And Val just hands the piece of paper over to the burden. And it shows that the burden and the seeker only report up to the golden tree. There are no pirates. There's no Captain Livingstone on it. Checkers isn't on there?
with a question mark.
Yeah.
No, he's just... Checkers is alongside the burden.
Yeah, he's got a dot line.
I just had this image in my head of like Checkers just kind of like nodding, and then turns back to the org chart and just pulls out a marker, and it's just like, yeah. And then all of a sudden the bones is like on the org chart along with everybody else at the bottom.
And Val will just say like, yeah, you know, you are here for the city of Agmar. The Golden Tree are the representative of the city of Agmar here. Captain Livingstone and his crew are kind of a separate entity, so here's the org chart to hopefully clear up that confusion.
And he, looks at this, looks at you, looks at Checkers, looks down, looks up at Checkers. Okay. If you think that's best, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I will say, if, you know, the crew... or the captain needs help with specific things, feel free to lend a hand. I think the org chart comes into place with like specific orders.
It's just that the org chart seems really clear on, because it's, I mean.
Then follow the org chart. Forget what I just said. Org chart over everything.
Really quick, just to clarify, and starts launching into a thing, and the Seeker, actually, who is a little bit kind of smaller and slender in build and kind of has a slightly more feminine-sounding voice, again, she, her, just kind of, like, at this point, steps forward to you and kind of does that thing where you're kind of, like, shoulder-to-shoulder talking, and is like, if I may suggest...
No, wait, I want to see how far this goes.
Spoiler, you have lots of time to really dig into that. I think the burden would maybe do best below decks, maybe like moving boxes or organizing.
That works for me.
The heavier the better, usually.
Gaskrin.
Yeah. Wait.
I am assuming Kashkin was in charge of supplies, which is why I called.
That's
you.
Fair. Yes, and Kashkin's also been listening into this conversation.
Supplies.
It's very generous of you to call this a conversation.
Yeah. Kashkin's gonna kind of come up and like put his arms or like on the burden's shoulder, and it's just like, let me show you around to where I like to hang out.
That's really great. I appreciate that. Just really quick. Is that an order to follow? I'm happy to, but I don't...
And, like, Castron is kind of, like, leading him off the deck of the ship.
Absolutely.
And you just hear the trailing words.
Happy. Like, is pushed along by a gentle breeze.
Yeah, right.
Is so eager to go along with you, but it's just needs, like, a little bit more clarification.
Yeah.
The Seeker, you know, just kind of leans in and just kind of nods a little and just... As much as we can be nervous, the burden... Well, he's probably the most of what you would call nervous of us, but he's a good soldier. He'll calm down.
I didn't know you were affected by nervousness.
Most of us are not, and by most, I mean none but him.
As an outside observer, it seems that maybe all of the... fear and nervousness that you would have normally experienced was channeled into a single member of the bones.
There are a lot of theories about the burden, but let's put it this way. As you all know, I know you all have had several relationships with members of our order, and each of us has a few things that we're particularly drawn to that help define us, help create our identity. And we have very little control over what those are. And for some reason, it seems like for him, that energy is interesting.
Interesting.
Me, on the other hand, as my name might suggest, I would be happy to take up the watch.
Sounds great.
Would it be all right if I went up to the crow's nest?
We should get confirmation that the crow's nest can support the weight of one of the bones.
Correct me if I'm wrong. They are extremely heavy, aren't they?
I believe that is true.
Not a bad question to ask Captain Livingstone. Would you also be interested in learning the navigation? Because that's something I was planning on learning, but I didn't know how much your interest carried over to that specifically.
Hi. Hi. Great. Yes. Hi. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yep. That sounds great.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hey everyone, Jonathan here with the midroll. If you're looking for the hottest frog memes around, join the Reckless Attack community on Discord. You can find a link to it in the show notes of our latest episodes or on our website, recklessattack.com. Want to support the show? Tell a friend or check out our Patreon at patreon.com/recklessattack, where you can get access to our behind-the-screen talkback show as well as our new Reckless of Snacks series, where we eat snacks, hang out, and just talk about whatever's on our mind. Thanks so much for listening to us, and we hope you enjoy the rest of the episode.
What's Checkers up to?
I think Checkers just left. he left a lot.
He took the trifold and he's gone.
Yeah, he has abandoned
the ship.
Well, I meant
like, what's he up to on a ship?
Like on a day-to-day basis?
Or just like right now, it was like, is he in the crow's nest? Or what is he doing as Admiral Captain Checkers? Is he just standing behind Captain Livingstone like, ah, yes. on the other side of the wheel.
I almost feel like it would be one of those things that Checkers did very early on when we ended up at the guild hall, was that he went to the highest point and made a nest, essentially.
Correct.
And so I kind of have that, like, that's the vibe I'm kind of getting, is that Checkers has gone up to the highest point and is making himself his little, like, nest.
Excuse me, command nest. Thank you very much.
Yes, command nest.
Admiral command nest.
That was another question I had.
Yes.
Of, I think for the rest of the guild and like the bones is pretty easy to slot in where RIP the Craigs were, where the Craigs were housed. We slot into there. Is Admiral Captain Checkers claiming the captain's quarters?
Checkers is not. He actually is not taking a room. He sleeps among the sails and among the crow's nest. So he's building like his nest up there. He's got little ropes and everything all the way up there, but he sleeps, you know, outside.
And to be clear, this ship is again pretty large, and you kind of over the course of the last couple of days of getting to know the ship, kind of quizzing the crew about some of the details, would know their best guess. Again, this is probably some sort of old cargo ship, something like that. Does obviously have some amount of weaponry, you guys know that firsthand, but also does have a pretty robust amount of space for crew, both in terms of bunk beds, but also a lot actually of individual quarters. So there's actually plenty of space for you guys to take various individual quarters if you want.
Does it look like basically they had taken over sections of what used to be like a cargo hold and just kind of like divided it up into, you know, different crew quarters? Or were there that many crew quarters to begin with?
Yeah, it's a great question. And there is actually that many crew quarters. There's definitely a couple that are kind of the classic hammock bunk kind of setups that are in the back. But as far as you guys are, yeah, there are actually, again, it's not furnished. It's not fancy. They're not particularly big even compared to your guys' rooms at home. But as far as ship travel goes, they're pretty decent rooms. And you all have your own travel hammocks already there, should you so choose.
Curious if this is not important at all. Ships have hammocks because of the waves. So if there's no turbulence on the airship, why do they adopt hammock?
That's a great question. You should ask it if you care to. I have answers. Oh. Nathan has answers.
It could be that when this ship didn't have holes in it, it was capable of both.
Val will ask literally every question she thinks of.
So the answer to that question and probably can be extended to other follow-up questions that Val might have, is that it comes out that all of these crew members were actually former sailors for the most part. And there are a lot of, you know, a little bit of just enough kind of carryover skill, especially lifestyle-wise, that they were able to adapt to this life decently and figure out the rest. And there are just definitely a few touches of things that they have kind of brought for themselves. Plus, you know, you don't want cots and mattresses and stuff shaken all over the place with turbulence or Raven Mount attacks or what have you either. So,
can I propose something for, like, kind of as the day carries on?
Absolutely.
Because I'm imagining, you know, we've been traveling for a little bit. We had the presentation. We know where the pecking order is now. And we know for however long that's going to last, at least. And I kind of imagine things have settled down a little bit. And Kaskrin and the Burden are below decks.
Mm-hmm.
And Kaskrin is also just settling in surprisingly quickly. Given that these are all former sailors, it's like basically he never left Lotros.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he knows kind of the jargon. He knows just from hearing it so often. And he finds that he fits in surprisingly quickly.
Yeah.
I imagine the crew goes on their routines. I am also actually curious. Do any of them mourn the loss of the first mate?
So, yes. As you are below decks, eventually, just kind of as you're bopping around, doing things, making sure all the supplies are in order, all that good stuff, you would actually see set up just a very small, like, sailor's memorial to the Craigs and to the first mate. It's very, very simple. It is just like mirrors kind of under each of the names written down on a scroll that has been like puttied or, you know, sapped, you know, using like some sort of adhesive to the side of the ship. And it is just their names up there and the mirrors. While you're down there, no one comes to visit it or anything like that, but it's probably something that you are familiar with. Again, just having absorbed a seafaring culture for as long as you did, you are able to recognize at least probably what this would be.
Yeah. And I'm curious too, are there other names besides, like, how long does the list go?
So there are a few more. All of those mirrors are a little bit dustier and dirtier. And they're all kinds of different mirrors. They're not like the same things. Like, it seemed like maybe just whatever they've been able to kind of forage or put together over the years. But there aren't that many names additionally. There's probably only 2 to 3, maybe 4 other names.
Okay.
On the wall too.
Gotcha. Okay.
What else is everyone doing? You're on their first day. Again, obviously, there's a lot to handle emotionally processing. The org chart, I'm sure, has been a blow to both morale and egos. But yeah, is there anything that you guys are doing, conversations you're having, things you're watching, things you are eager to learn about in this first day as just things start to move forward?
I think Val is so excited to learn about everything that she doesn't truly focus on any one thing. And it's kind of just like going about the ship and like, oh, that looks interesting, I'll follow that and like ask questions about that until something else pops up. And like, her notebook at the end of the day is the most disorganized as it's ever been, because so many things have caught her attention.
I'll give one tiny detail as part of that. Eventually, kind of that thing of you noticing and then just pulling on the thread brings you to the engine room. and you realize that there are all sorts of ducts and valves and stuff all over the ship that all lead back there. There's not tons of activity around there. The Tims probably are in every once in a while. There's probably a Tim in there most of the time. But it is a very simple room in many ways. There's a few, you know, various kind of steampunky dials and switches and whatever. But the main bit is a huge glass dome. And it is super foggy. You can't see through it other than you can feel the heat and see the vague fiery glow of something burning yellow, orange, red, hot in the middle of whatever this is.
That, Tim, is going to answer a lot of questions for now.
I am certain.
So Selv is basically taking that first day to enjoy the scenery, just kind of like sightseeing, watching, you know, from different spots on the ship, just kind of keeping a lookout, and is going to enjoy the dragon eye view of everything kind of going by, because this is kind of what he imagines as being able to fly anytime you want and kind of see this stuff from this vantage point. And is just going to take it in.
Probably at this point. And we'll definitely be doing the what are cool things you see along the way exercise as we travel. But I think the thing for you, Selv, that would be... There's a lot of interesting things, obviously. But from here, now that you've traveled for, you know, a good hunk of a day, in the distance, you can see a faint glow coming from some mountains north of your position. And you would know that this is the volcano that the abbey that you visited. You can see it, and you know the direction of Agmar, and get a sense of the scale, either the enormity of the scale or the lack of scale, depending on it. But you can almost see both and imagine both at the same time, just giving that little perspective on your journey.
Kaskrin, as the day kind of winds down, is going to conquer one of his greatest fears. He goes up to the main mast. The middle
wearing
of the ship.
Regular pajamas.
Yes. And yeah, I'm gonna say he is wearing pajamas, actually. He's wearing his hat, he's wearing his like silk shirt and pants. He's not wearing the slippers though, because he is going to try to climb the mast all the way up to the crow's nest and take in the starry night sky. I think with Checkers, if he's up there.
Yeah, absolutely. Checkers is like, I would say I kind of want the Seeker up at the very top.
Yeah, same. I was like, yeah. I was thinking the Seeker would be up there too.
Yeah, so like we can all get together and just like hang out at the top.
1,000,000%.
Yeah. And so like I kind of imagine you up there and Kaskrin's like psyching himself up, like his stone hands are getting sweaty and like starts to climb the rungs and everything. And so Kaskrin's like climbing this thing and there's this almost like, I don't know. I'm just imagining a scene where it's like a side view of Kaskrin is just like slowly following him up as he's like climbing up these different rungs, ascending into the night sky, getting higher and higher. And he reaches the crow's nest. And there he finds Checkers. And there he finds the Seeker. And like by this point, he's used to the uncomfortable aura that the Seeker puts out. So it doesn't really feel like a bother. And he's able to kind of relax in a way, making sure not to look down at any point throughout this climb. What is Checkers doing?
I think Checkers is also kind of taking in the end of the first day. You know, just taking in everything that's happened today. So Checkers is surprisingly quiet. You know, like, as you were climbing up, you probably didn't even notice that Checkers was in the crow's nest until you got up here.
Right.
And you find that, like, oh, I'm just going to enjoy myself. Oh, there's Checkers. So it's a very contemplative evening.
Yeah.
Just looking at the stars from this distance, from this angle.
And Casgrin kind of, like, you know, rests his arms on the side of the crow's nest and is, like, looking out at the different, the starry night sky and the mountains as they slowly move past us as we sail. And for a while, he doesn't say anything, just enjoying the moment. After a while, though, he does speak up and ask Checkers. So, do you think you're the greatest guilder?
The Seeker takes a moment of also taking in the scenery, just lightly cranes the armor in the direction of Checkers.
Well, I don't know many guilders who have ever been admiral captain of a skyship before. So I got that going for me, at least.
You do have that going for you. I will say, I didn't think you'd make it this far either, if I have to be perfectly honest.
But am I the greatest guilder? I think we'll have to see once we get over all of this. Once we've beaten the Ultra Giant and sailed back to Agmar as heroes.
And Casgrin kind of looks. He's been trying to avoid looking at this the whole time as they've been sailing. But, because there is a part of the landscape that is serene, that is wonderful, that is interesting. And then you look a little bit to the right, and there becomes a part of the landscape that is dark and terrifying and broken. There's a part of the landscape where it's not just dark clouds, but it's dark clouds of ash.
Now that it's darker, you can probably see a glow in that direction, opposite of the volcano, where you know the Ultra Giant is as well.
And so Casperton kind of, you know, takes a few more moments, looks at the landscape, looks at Checkers. And then Casgrin will start slowly making his way back down.
It's nighttime. It's sort of the end of the day. We've established pajamas are on. at least one member of the guild, and probably everyone is winding down for the evening.
Val would have asked what the nighttime procedures are and what alarm she should wake up to. She probably made the captain ring it. So she'd be like, all right, I'm locked in.
I got it. Yeah. And that is actually part of kind of one of the last bits of order that you knew that you as Admiral Captain Checkers would have to kind of like, all right, so are we bedding down for the night? Are we pulling over? That sort of thing. It was kind of a last conversation that you knew you probably needed to have before the end of the day. But unfortunately, that conversation isn't going to happen just yet. Because the rest of you here... a voice roar above those crackling, peaceful fireplace sounds. And you start to hear the sound of fire intensify and deepen and start to roar just a little bit. As Captain Livingstone yells out in a voice that you swear must be supernaturally amplified, but might just be because... he's very dramatic. All crew, up on deck now! All hands! All hands!
Val is so fast again.
What is it, Captain?
Self's kind of already up there.
All the rest of you are coming up. It seems to be a beautiful night. Totally clear. You can see more stars than you've probably maybe ever seen up above the trees, far away from cities. And you can see... the captain, the admiral captain, the seeker, and anyone else who's up there and made it, looking straight ahead of your ship. Up in the air, you can see at first a perfect circle missing from the skyline, where stars are blotted out and there is no horizon beyond it. And it is getting rapidly larger, encompassing more and more, and clearly you two are on a collision course. And in this starry night, full moon, you can see details of red lightning coursing throughout what appears to be a swirling orb of roiling clouds. Self, you know what is happening, what is about to happen to this ship, because you've experienced this before. Self, in front of you is an arcane storm. And Captain Livingstone turns slightly to Checkers and says, "Awaiting orders, Admiral Captain."
And maybe for the first time in a long time, Checkers is really like, you know, he's feeling the weight of responsibility. And all he can manage in this moment is a weak "land ho."
And that's where we'll end it this week, everyone. Boy. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. I kind of want the Seeker up at the very top.
Yeah, same. I was like, yeah. I was thinking the Seeker would be up there too.
Yeah, so like we can all get together and just like hang out at the top.
1,000,000%.
Yeah. And so like I kind of imagine you up there and Casper's like psyching himself up, like his stone hands are getting sweaty and like starts to climb the rungs and everything.
And I know you said that Cass is not wearing the slippers, but is he barefoot? Like, and actually, are the regular crew barefoot? Like they would typically be on an ocean ship?
Interesting question.
Because you said there was some carryover between, like, they used to be sailors.
Yeah, your toes would be so chilly in the wind.
That's true.
Yeah.
At nighttime, definitely everyone's wearing footwear. I'll decide on that particular bit of world building, but that's an interesting question.
Does Caskrin wear shoes normally?
I would say no, because they can't find size 36 shoes that would fit his
stone feet. Big old stone feet?
Yeah, big old stone feet.
Custom-made slippers, though.
Yeah, the slippers are easier to do than, like, full shoes.
Oh, gosh, we never answered the question for Checkers.
Does Checkers wear shoes?
Does Checkers wear shoes?
Yeah, he wears shoes. He has leather shoes.
All right. Well, when we always talk about Checkers running, we always make the plop, plop, plop.
Yeah, yeah. Like, because, in his shoes.
Because they're,
they don't have bottoms, but he has shoes.
Or it's just very wet leather, which is also a very bad sound to plop around.